In India, they tell this story. Once upon a time, a woman was walking with her child to visit a shrine in the midst of a nearby field. The child was laughing, the day was bright, the birds in nearby fields were singing. When the shrine was just before them, the child went eagerly to it, then recoiled in horror. The child ran back to its mother, crying and clinging to her. "Snakes," the child cried. "There are snakes everywhere. We cannot go to the shrine. I'm afraid." The mother held her child to her and called out to a nearby neighbor. Out of her house, the neighbor came, holding the family's pet mongoose. As the neighbor approached the shrine, the mongoose leapt from her arms and ran snarling after the snakes, scattering them far and away. The mongoose then lay down before the shrine while the woman and her child prayed and left their offerings. And again the birds sang, and the day was bright as the family and the neighbor returned to their homes and daily lives. I heard this story at the opening worship for the meetings of the UU ministers in my region. The story, accompanied by a reading from the poet Rumi, born in what is now Afghanistan in the year 1207. When Rumi was still a young man, his family fled from their native city ahead of the armies of Genghis Khan. They landed near Damascus in a place where a great teacher and theologian lived. Rumi's own father was known for his own mystical writings, and when a teacher saw him coming with a young Rumi walking behind, he is said to have declared, "Here comes a sea, followed by an ocean." All around the family in the Middle East of that time, Genghis Khan and the armies of the Crusades gave little safety to the people. It was not different than the situation today in those areas. A period of political turmoil and war. There were lots of snakes in those fields and shrines. Rumi grew in wisdom and in stature to become one of the most renowned mystics and poets of his time. Today, books of his poems are bestsellers still in the United States and all over the world. His devotion to the blessings of life, his constant ability to see those blessings in the midst of all that life gave him, all these have sung in the hearts of human beings for centuries. That's because they're so true, so penetrating of the truths of our existence, so illuminating of the paths that allow us to live sanely and in celebration of the blessings of life. How wonderful it is to have those among us who lift the light to enable us to keep fresh before us the moments of our high resolve and to walk with them. Here is what Rumi wrote that so moved my colleagues and I believe will lift a light before you too. This poem is called Work in the Invisible. The prophets have wondered to themselves, "How long shall we keep pounding this cold iron? How long do we have to whisper into an empty cage? Every motion of created beings comes from the Creator. The first soul pushes, and your second soul responds, beginning, so don't stay timid. Load the ship and set out. No one knows for certain whether the vessel will sink or reach the harbor. Cautious people say, I'll do nothing until I can be sure. Merchants know better. If you do nothing, you lose. Don't be one of those people who won't risk the ocean. This is much more important than losing or making money. This is your connection to God. You must set fire to have light. Trust means you're ready to risk what you currently have. Think of your fear and hope about your livelihood. They make you go to work diligently every day. Now consider what the prophets have done. Abraham wore fire for an anklet. Moses spoke to the sea. David molded iron and Solomon rode the wind. Work in the invisible world at least as hard as you do in the visible. Be companions with the prophets, even though no one here will know that you are, not even the helpers of the Kuth, the Abdals. You can't imagine what profit will come when one of those generous ones invites you into his fire. Go quickly. Don't say, but will it burn me? Will it hurt? In the Quran, an Abdul is one of the 500 substitutes for the prophets, but they are unknown to us. So when someone invites you into his fire, it may be an Abdul. There are stories about such things in the Christian and Jewish traditions. One never knows when the stranger at your door may be an angel. So always invite the stranger in and entertain him as though he were an angel. That's what saved Lot in the story of Sodom and Gomorrah. He invited the strangers into his home and kept them from the fury of the crowd that strove to kill them. It turns out that the strangers were angels. When all of Sodom was burned, Lot and his family were let out because he had followed the command to always entertain the stranger as though he or she were an angel. In this poem, Rumi urges the reader to be a companion of the prophets, to wear fire as an anklet and to ride the wind, even though those who are the substitutes for the prophets may not know you are doing this. It isn't about recognition. It's about integrity, Rumi reminds us. It isn't about being safe. It's about doing that to which your highest resolve calls you. But walking into the fire takes courage. It takes something that holds you even in the hard times. Rumi called that something knowledge that the beloved is always with you. In Christian language, we would say that God is always with you. And some of us might say that which is ultimately matters is always with you. Like many of our universalist forebears, Rumi believed that the spark of whatever God is resides in every human being, that we are made of the same essence as God, that every motion of creation comes from the Creator, as he put it in this poem. In this poem, the prophets are getting tired of pounding iron and want human beings to remember for what they are given life. It is not to just expect goodness. It's to be and do it. And it is to be and do it because you know that God is within you whatever happens. From a boy who grew up as a refugee and lived all his life in the path of warring armies of strangers bent on taking all he had from him and his life, Rumi remembers and reminds us what is of the true essence of life cannot be taken from us. And we need to use this knowing to be able to set fire, to have life. Without trust and courage, life is empty, an empty balloon waiting for the air to fill it. It's our job to blow the spirit of life into the vessels of life. It's not our job to lie shivering under the bed, but rather to go out into the storm. And when we do, we lose our fear of the storm. Sometimes the role of parents and grandparents is to be a mongoose, to chase away the snakes. My 7-year-old granddaughter is terrified of thunderstorms. So it's my job to be the mongoose, to count after the lightning flash until we hear the thunder, to do all the things that help her to get through a storm. In ministerial education, the role of the minister is supposed to be the non-anxious presence. Remember that, Joan? Often, though, one is not really non-anxious, but one has to act non-anxious anyway. When I was doing my clinical pastoral education piece of studying for the ministry, working in Children's Hospital in Detroit as a student chaplain, a little boy was brought into the emergency room. He'd run into the street and was hit by a car and dragged until the car's driver could stop. The emergency room physicians and nurses managed to get him on a respirator and keep him breathing that way, but that was all. They would know within a few hours if he was really brain dead. The wait was terrible. The distraught mother moved restlessly between the waiting room and the hallway outside the room where the medical crew was at work. She would often break into wails, and she bashed her head against the wall, and I walked over and held her so that she couldn't hurt herself. A few days later, the father of the boy, who was a drug addict, came to the hospital, and he cried and yelled, but often turned to the mother for solace as though she was his own mother. I never left the area when he was in the waiting room outside the intensive care. Then one evening, I heard him shouting, and I ran into that corridor and saw the mother being chased by the father. She dived into a phone booth, and he wrenched open the door and began beating on her. I paged security and began running towards the couple. I shouted, "You can't do that! Get off of her! Step away from the phone booth!" I ran all the way up to them, and the father was so shocked that he backed off for a moment. I grabbed him and began to pull him away from the phone booth, and just then security arrived, thank goodness. And they got the father in hand, so to speak, and accompanied him out of the hospital, and he was never allowed back in. Weeks later, when the mother had agreed to remove the respirator and the little boy finally died, I walked her out to her car in the parking structure. She hugged me and pressed something into my hand. After she had left, I opened my hand and discovered 2 gummy bear candies. It was all she had to give anyone, and I had been her mongoose. I didn't set out to be a mongoose. It's just that the moment opened up, and I was called into the fire, and I ran. If I'd stopped to think, I might have waited for security, but I bet everyone in this room would have done the same thing as I did, run into that fire without even thinking if it would hurt. I believe that each of you has done something like that more than once in your life. It may not have been so dramatic, and perhaps you took a grieving person into your arms and just held him close. That is a mongoose chasing away snakes. Looking someone in the eye and listening to a hard story but not offering to fix it, just listening, that can be a mongoose thing too. Quietly offering a place to stay for somebody who needs it, that's entertaining angels sort of mongoose behavior. Sitting with a child during a storm and telling of a time when you were afraid, but not insisting that the child is afraid. Oh, no, of course not. That's being a mongoose. Who's been a mongoose for you? Or what has been a mongoose? A colleague has a mantra she says when she is afraid. She murmurs it below her breath. One person I know says over and over, "This too shall pass." And another says, "Give it to God," and even makes the motion of throwing her hands open. Sometimes I look out the window and find somewhere out there something beautiful. It's easy when I'm home and I live on a river and the river flows by and the geese glide on it and the trees hang over as though bowing before that which holds and keeps them. But when I am in some places, there doesn't seem to be anything. But look, and look again. A woman who survived Nazi concentration camps said that she saw another woman fall to her knees in the midst of chaos and just gaze at the sky. Then that woman rose up and went on sitting next to those, calmly, calmly sitting next to those who were trembling with fear. The woman had found her bit of beauty, affirmation of the life that held her even when she was walking toward death. She had found her mongoose, and then she could be a mongoose for others. The author of the Indian folktale would say, "There's always a neighbor with a mongoose. What's your mongoose, and where is it?"